In our last lesson on the sayings of the crucifixion, we found at the introduction of that lesson that Jesus had left the trial of Caiaphas and the Jews had taken him to the judgment hall of Pilate. However, we stopped at that particular point because there was another event that was transpiring. Judas now came to the understanding that Jesus was going to be condemned to death. He was now feeling the guilt of his actions. He immediately took the 30 pieces of silver back to the high priests and to the scribes and to the elders and told them, "I have sinned in that I have betrayed innocent blood." Their response was absolutely unconcerned, wasn't it? What is that to us? See thou to that. He throws the 30 pieces of silver down upon the temple floor, and rather than truly repenting, out he went and hanged himself. And those were the thoughts and the subjects of our previous lesson. We now turn our attention back to Jesus at the judgment hall of Pontius Pilate. As you read Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you might think that Jesus was taken to Pilate and the Jews also immediately enter into the judgment hall of Pontius Pilate as well, because that seems to be the indication that you give. But when you read the Gospel of John, you find out that that was not the case at all. We turn to John 18, verse 28. Look what the text says. And they led Jesus from Caiaphas unto the hall of judgment. And it was early. Now note this. And they themselves went not in to the judgment hall, lest they be defiled. Note why. But that they may eat the Passover. All of us as Christians are familiar with the Passover, aren't we? It was one of the three major feasts of the Jews. It commemorated the passing over of that death angel, of all the firstborn of the Israelites who had the blood of the Passover lamb placed upon the doorpost and upon the lintels. It was remembered every year by the Jews, and the Jews thought of it as a very important feast. In fact, it was a family feast. And all of the families entered into the city of Jerusalem, and there would have been hundreds and thousands, perhaps even millions of individuals in attendance at that particular feast. And these Jewish leaders did not want to miss that feast. Because Pilate was a Gentile, they believed in their mind that entering into that judgment hall would have defiled themselves. And if they defiled themselves, then they would have to wash and they would be declared unclean until even. And therefore, they would be eliminated from eating the Passover. So the Bible says, but they themselves went not in to the judgment hall. Now, aren't we again impressed with the hypocrisy of the Jews? Just think about these men. They are so concerned about becoming ceremonially unclean, are they not? Oh, we can't go into that judgment hall. We'll be defiled, and if we're defiled, we can't eat the Passover. Oh, we're so religious. We're so righteous. We're so godly. And yet, they are totally unconcerned about the defilement of their heart that has brought them to the judgment hall. It's amazing, isn't it? Here they are bringing a man who is innocent before Pontius Pilate so that he can condemn this man to death. And yet they have absolutely no concern about their inner defilement, but they're so concerned about that outward defilement of entering into the judgment hall. Barnes makes a very interesting statement about this matter in his commentary. He says this: probably there is not anywhere to be found among men another such instance of petty regard for mere ceremonies of the law and attempting to keep free from pollution. At the same time that their hearts were filled with malice and they were meditating the most enormous of all crimes. Oh, we can't be ceremonially unclean, but we can kill the Son of God. Hypocrisy to the nth degree, isn't it? As we read through the gospel accounts, we're intrigued by what one writer includes and another excludes. And so as you read, you have to read with caution, you have to read with care, and you have to try to put those accounts together so that you truly understand all that is transpiring. For you see, when you read Matthew and Mark, it seems as though Jesus and the Jews immediately enter into the judgment hall, and Pilate begins to ask questions, namely whether Jesus believes he's a king. Find it interesting that Luke is the only writer out of all four who mentions Jesus' trial before Herod. And it happens right in the middle of the trial before Pontius Pilate. We'll come back to that in a later lesson. It's interesting as well that Matthew is the only writer, Matthew chapter 27 verse 19, that talks about Pontius Pilate's wife, who had a dream about Jesus. And she even intercedes on his behalf, doesn't she? And she tells Pilate, have nothing to do with this just man. And yet Pilate totally disregards the words of his wife. We'll come back to her later on during this trial as well. Here's a very interesting note, folks. Jesus' trial before Pontius Pilate was a private session. Did you ever really know that? It's interesting, isn't it? Now remember, the Jews would not go in where? To the judgment hall, lest they be defiled. So John's gospel tells us in the very next verse, Pilate then went out unto them. You see, they wouldn't come out to him, so what does he do? He goes out to the Jews in order to ask them questions about Jesus. When he's through talking to the Jews, notice what John's gospel tells us. Then Pilate entered into the judgment hall and called Jesus. Where are the Jews? They're still on the outside, aren't they? You see, this is a private session that Jesus has with Pontius Pilate. Therefore, we have entitled this particular section, Jesus' Private Encounter with Pilate. Just one-on-one. One king to another king. One man to another man. A Jew versus a Gentile. And it's going to be interesting as we find out what these two individuals discuss and the thoughts that Pilate has about this man. Before we go on into this lesson, we need to talk for just a few minutes about who this Pontius Pilate is. The first point that we would note is that he is the Roman governor. Some refer to him as the procurator of Judea. He was a king over the region of Judea, appointed by the Roman authorities, and he reigned from AD 26 unto AD 36. Some 11 years among the Jews. It's interesting that we know very, very little factual information about this man. In fact, we don't really know where he was born. Isn't that interesting? Most individuals, most commentators, most scholars of the Old Testament believe that Pontius Pilate was born in Italy, but there's no proof of that. Some say Scotland, some say Spain, some say the regions of Germany itself. There's nobody who truly knows exactly where he was born. Notice also, he was a married man. We know that even from the biblical text, don't we? His wife has this dream about him, a very discouraging dream, a very troubling dream, a dream that causes her to react and immediately make contact with her husband and tell him, have nothing to do with this man. No name is given though, is it? When you go into tradition, when you go into secular history and try to find out a little about his wife, the only thing that we can come up with is this name. P-R-O-C-L-A. How would you like that name? Procla. Beautiful child's name, isn't it? What's your name, your little daughter? Oh, her name's Procla. Notice this point. As governor of Judea, he had three main priorities. Number one, he was over a military unit of about 3,000 men. His number one priority, as far as the Roman government was concerned, was to make certain that his region maintained peace. And he had the military to stop any uprisings, any rebellions, any insurrections against Rome. My friends, if there were any trouble in the region and he could not suppress it, Rome would be on him in a heartbeat. Secondly, it was his responsibility to make certain that all of the taxes for the Roman government, the tribute, was collected. Keep that point in mind as we go through this particular lesson. And lastly, it was he who was to have interaction with the local authorities. As far as the Jews was concerned, their authority was the high priest and the Sanhedrin. Question, who was it who had brought Jesus to Pilate that morning? It was the Sanhedrin, wasn't it? You see, this is Pilate's obligation. I must take this case. Here's another interesting thing. Pilate did not favor the Jews. Can you imagine that? You're ruling over a group of people, and he doesn't care for them at all. In fact, he disdains these individuals. And during the course of his reign, he did all kinds of things in order to intimidate them, in order to antagonize them. Just look at two or three things. First, when he got the throne in Judea, he allowed his Roman soldiers to bring their gods into the land of Palestine. My friends, the Jews had been free of idolatry since the days after the Babylonian captivity. That captivity had ridded them of their idolatrous worship. And now Pilate allows these men to come in and just set up their gods throughout the land of Israel. You see, he was antagonistic to them. That lasted for several months, and finally, he ordered those images removed. A second thing that he did, he went into the temple of the Jews, a holy place, is it not? And upon those walls, he put golden shields of the Roman armies, defiling the temple of God. It took an order from Caesar Augustus to have those particular shields removed from the temple. Thirdly, he took money from the temple in order to have an aqueduct for water built. And if any of the Jews rose up in protest against the taking of that money from their holy temple, he immediately ordered their execution. Here is a man who has no affinity whatsoever for the people under his care. Can you imagine that morning when they show up with Jesus, how he felt about those individuals? We'll talk about it more in a minute. He's mentioned by all four of the gospel writers. He's also found in two other books, Acts and 2 Timothy. He is mentioned 56 times in 54 verses. Here's what's interesting. He is very briefly involved in the histories of four writers. Number one, Tacitus. Number two, Philo. Number three, Josephus. And then Eusebius. But the only thing that he is truly known for in all of the histories and in the Gospels involves his trial concerning Jesus and the crucifixion of the Son of God. My friends, this is Pilate's mark in history. This is the one thing for which he is known. Isn't that something? Here you are, you're living as a king. You want to do wonderful things. You want to be well known. You want to have your 15 minutes of fame. And he finally gets it, does he not? And the only thing he's known for is the crucifixion of the Son of God. After his reign, he only lived 3 more years. Caligula occupied the throne. And as the emperor, he ordered Pilate to put himself to death. And he did by suicide. Not a very flamboyant life, is it? Not much to tell about. And yet he occupies a very prominent position in the Gospels of the New Testament. This has been a long introduction. So we're not going to have time to get into the biblical text a lot, but we're going to start with the first point, the accusations. It begins with the asking. In John 18, 29, remember the text says that Pilate went out unto those individuals. That is a fact that Matthew and Mark don't tell us about. You start reading Matthew and Mark, and all you read about is he begins to question Jesus Christ. Are you a king? Are you a king? But that's not where everything begins. Notice what the text says. Pilate went out unto them and said, notice, what accusation bring ye against this man? Is that a good question? Absolutely. Folks, in order to prosecute an individual, there must be accusations, hadn't there? You shouldn't prosecute a man for absolutely no reason. The Jews shouldn't be able to walk up to Pilate and say, put him to death. And Pilate says, oh, fine, I'll put him to death. It shouldn't be the way it is. It should be based upon accusations. Now, accusations can be true. Accusations can be false. And what I find interesting about the Jews is that the accusations that they had to make against Jesus could not involve the law of Moses at all. When the Jews approached Pontius Pilate, they couldn't go to Pontius Pilate and say, Pilate, we think he's guilty of death because he's broken the law of Moses. Pilate could care less. If they're going to bring Jesus to Pontius Pilate, they're going to have to find him guilty of crimes against Rome itself. Pilate had to deal with this, didn't he? This is becoming a troublesome situation. The Jewish leaders, the Sanhedrin, are agitated. Pilate knows that I've got to take this case, but as we begin to study it and as we begin to read, the one thing we find out is this. Pilate wants nothing, nothing to do with this situation. And yet he has to deal with it. I find it interesting. Remember what was the question? What accusation bring ye against this man? Here's their assurance. They answered and said unto him, if he were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him unto thee. What do they say? Pilate, just trust us. You know who we are. We're the Sanhedrin. We're the leaders of the Jews. If this man wasn't a malefactor, we would have never brought him to you. We wouldn't waste your time on something trivial. This is something of vital importance. This man's a what? A malefactor. We don't use that word very often, do we? A malefactor. Notice the definition. A bad doer. An evil doer. A worker of evil. A criminal. Pilate, this man is a criminal. He is a horrible fellow. He is a bad doer. He is a worker of evil. And if he weren't that, we would have never brought him to you. But here's what I find interesting. The only crime that the Jews had accused Jesus of in the trial before Caiaphas was what? Blasphemy. Are you the Son of God? What did Jesus say? I am. Blasphemy. Folks, listen to me. That violation was a violation of the law of Moses. It had absolutely nothing to do with Roman law. Nothing. But you see, they're going to have to convince Pilate that Jesus has somehow broken Roman law. And you need to deal with him on a higher level than just Jewish law. But the only accusation they have is blasphemy. Now I say that, the only one that they might have justification for is blasphemy. Notice this. They accuse Jesus of being a malefactor, a criminal, when everything they were doing made them workers of iniquity. Isn't that true? Folks, think about what's going on. They have covenanted together with one of Jesus' apostles for 30 pieces of silver so that he will betray him into their hands. They had offered a bribe to a man in order to get him to turn upon his own master. Secondly, there were no charges to bring upon Jesus. Even the charge of blasphemy was not true, was it? Question. What are judges supposed to do? They're supposed to examine the evidence, are they not? They're supposed to look at everything that's involved in the case and then make a decision. And they had done none of that as far as Jesus was concerned. What had Jesus admitted? I am the Son of God. Here's the question. Was that true? Was there evidence to back up the claim? And there was evidence. There was plenty of evidence. Look at my works. Look at the prophecies of the Old Testament. I am who I say I am. And they refused to look at the evidence. They had even brought false witnesses themselves against the Christ in order to determine guilt. You tell me who the malefactors were. It wasn't Jesus. The evildoers on this evening was none other than the Jewish leaders themselves. Folks, that's not anti-Semitism. That is gospel truth. The Jews turned upon the Christ, didn't they? I find it interesting what Pilate says in regard to these individuals. Remember, what did they say? Oh, Pilate, trust us. He's a criminal. If he weren't a bad guy, we wouldn't have brought him to you. Look what he says. Then Pilate said unto them, take ye and judge him according to your law. The Jews therefore said unto him, it is not lawful for us to put any man to death. Now, there's a lot in that statement. Notice the first point. Pilate doesn't know what's transpired through the course of the night, does he? All he knows is he gets a knock on his judgment hall door, and it's the Jews. What you need, guys? Put him to death. What has he done? He has no clue that he's already been tried. You see, Pilate really doesn't want this case, does he? The very first thing Pilate tries to do is give the case right back to them. Take him and judge him according to what? Judge him according to your law. I don't want anything to do with this. Don't you think Pilate would have loved just to go back, shut the door, and leave the Jews to their own doings? He would have loved that. He wants out of this case badly. He exhorts them, try him by your own law. But their answer indicates that they had already tried Jesus, doesn't it? What did they say? We can put no man to death. What did they just tell Pilate? We've already judged him. He's already been through our court system. And we view him guilty of death crimes. And we want him put to death. But we can't do that. We need you to do that. You see, only the Roman authorities could carry out capital punishment in the days of the Jews. Now, go to John's Gospel, John 18, verse 32. And John makes a very interesting statement right here. What do the Jews want? The Jews want Jesus put to death. If they could have tried Jesus and put him to death by their law, which blasphemy was punishable by death, how would they have done it? It wouldn't have been by crucifixion. Jews didn't crucify individuals. It would have been by some other means. Perhaps stoning would have been the way that they would have killed Jesus. But here's what's interesting. Jesus had already told his own disciples exactly how he's going to die. Read Matthew 20, verse 19. Read Matthew 26, verse 2. Over and over, Jesus has told his disciples, I am going to die, watch this, by crucifixion. You know what that meant? The Romans had to do it. Jesus knew long before the event what was going to transpire. Therefore, John puts in this comment, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he had spoken, signifying by what death he should die. Jesus had told them, I'm going to be crucified. How did Jesus know that, folks? If he were violating Jewish law, he would have been stoned. He knew the Jews were going to have to take him to the Roman authorities. He knew that they're going to have to convince the Roman authorities to put him to death. He knew that Pilate would order his crucifixion. Jesus knew, I'm going to hang upon a cross and die for the sins of mankind. He had foretold it months and months and months before the event ever occurred. Luke is the only writer that mentions the actual allegations. Can you imagine what the Jews were having to think? They were hoping that Pilate would just accept the case, condemn Jesus to death, and it'd all be over. Oh no, not Pilate. What's he done? What are the allegations? What are the charges? Well, the Jews have to come up with some, and they do in Luke 23, verse 2. Notice what it says. And they began to accuse him, saying, we found this fellow, what? Perverting the nation? And what? Forbidding to pay tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself also was Christ a king. Notice they don't mention blasphemy, do they? Now at the conclusion of the trial of Caiaphas, blasphemy was the charge, wasn't it? Remember the high priest rent his garment and cried out, he's guilty of death. What say ye? And they all said, he's guilty of death. And yet when they bring him to Pilate, not one word is mentioned about blasphemy. Can't charge him with that crime. So what do? They just make up some other crimes that they know will cause Pilate to have to bring this man in and talk to him. Three things they accuse him of. Number one, corrupting the nation. We found this fellow what? Perverting the nation. Whose nation are we talking about? We're talking about the Roman nation. Folks, Roman was the world power at that particular time. And if anybody's going to corrupt the nation, if anybody's going to disturb the nation, if anybody's going to turn the nation upside down, then guess what? Rome wants to know about that. Did Jesus have a lot of people following him? Oh, man. Masses of people. And those Jews could have easily pointed to that, couldn't they? He has thousands of people over here, thousands of people over there. He draws crowds everywhere he goes. And guess what he's doing? He's trying to pervert the nation. But notice, secondly, he's curbing what? Curbing tribute. Now, what was the second responsibility that Pilate had as a Roman authority? To collect taxes. Now he's standing before a man who's trying to do what? He's standing before a man that the Jews say is trying to curb taxes. He's trying to forbid people to pay taxes to you. Aren't you concerned about that, Pilate? And thirdly, he claims he's a king. Question, was Pilate a king? He considered himself such. A minor king of the Roman Empire, but a king, a governor, a ruler. And was there another king that was in authority at that particular time in the Roman Empire? Oh, yes. The Roman emperor, folks. He was king. We've got trouble here, don't we? We've got a man standing before you who's trying to overthrow the nation, who's trying to cut back your taxes, and who's claiming that he is a king. Pretty serious charges. In fact, the charges were serious enough that Pilate wanted to talk to Jesus. Notice the text again. Then Pilate went into the judgment hall again and called unto him Jesus. Question. Where are the Jews? They're nowhere to be found. They're outside the judgment hall. Folks, it's at this point that Pilate and Jesus carry on a very private conversation one with another. And it's sad that we've reached the conclusion. I'm not even going to tell you what happens yet. You're going to have to schedule another Sunday night sometime to come back. Because you see, Pilate is disturbed by what these men have said to him. You know that? And the main thing that concerns him is his claim to be what? His claim to be a king. You see, that's why Matthew and Mark start their accounts out with that one question. Art thou a king? It's troubling. But here's what's really interesting. The answer of Jesus. Jesus answers in such a way that Pilate goes back out to those Jews, and guess what he tells them? I find no fault in this man. Man. Question. Was Jesus a king? Yeah. And what's interesting is when Pilate asks him, are you a king? He tells him, yes. And yet when he goes back out to the Jews, he tells the Jews, I don't find any fault in this man. How do you do that? How do you be a king under the Roman authorities and be declared innocent? You see, that involves Jesus' answer to Pilate. Interesting. We'll study the encounter in our next lesson. 2 or 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whenever we get to that next lesson. This is good stuff, guys. You know it? Intriguing what's going on. It's sad that our Lord had to go through this kind of a trial, isn't it? It's a dog and pony show. It's a mock trial. It's one that should have never been conducted. And yet, what's going to be Pontius Pilate's one claim to fame? I allowed the Jews to crucify the Son of the living God. And yet, it was all part of God's plan, wasn't it? Had he never died, you and I would never be here tonight, justified in the sight of God. On that cruel cross, he shed his blood. And it's that blood that gives us our redemption, isn't it? Do you need that redemption tonight? You need to obey the gospel through faith, repentance, confession, baptism for the forgiveness of sins. Won't you do that? Dear Christian, you and I need to rejoice in what we have. You know that? We've got something that's priceless. And one day, because of what Jesus did, you and I can live forever in that beautiful place called heaven. Here's my question to you. Are you going there? Are you going there? Is there something in your life that would keep you from that at this very hour? Maybe you need to repent of that and ask God to forgive you. Won't you come as we stand and sing?